Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking about hemp research with our first guest. What's going on in Wisconsin? Dr. Shelby Ellison, an assistant professor in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison. She's currently working with a team of scientists and extension educators to find the best production practices and cultivars for Wisconsin hemp growers. So as we visit with Dr. Ellison, I hope you'll join in. What would you like to know about her research? Are you growing hemp right now here in the state? What have your experiences been? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Or you could send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Shelby Ellison, welcome. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
So maybe we could talk first about the difference between the hemp you're working on and marijuana.
Sure. So interestingly, hemp and marijuana come from the same plant. They're both cannabis sativa. The difference is actually a legal definition. So hemp is cannabis sativa that has less than 0.3% THC or total THC. So it's really that psychoactive compound that's found in cannabis sativa. It has to have a small quantity of that to be hemp and then to be legal to grow in the state of Wisconsin.
Okay. And what are some of the biggest uses of hemp?
So there's three parts of a hemp plant that we currently have uses for. You can grow only female hemp plants. And in the field, you would use the flowers, which are where we can extract various cannabinoids such as CBD from. That's been in the news a lot, and people are becoming more familiar with CBD. And there's other cannabinoids such as CBG and CBN. You can also use the stalk, and that's where the kind of historical uses of hemp for the fibers are coming from the hemp stalk, and also the grain, which can be used for human food as well as animal food in other parts of the world.
You know, I was thinking back quite a few years back when I was a kid. I can remember a neighbor saying that he had some plants, hemp plants growing kind of out in the middle of one of his fields, and they sort of stood out in one of the local cops, I guess, or sheriff stopped by and told him to cut it down.
Yep.
And it was just started growing, you know. So, and we were once the leading producer of hemp in the U.S.
Yeah, so interestingly, Wisconsin did grow a lot of hemp in the 1940s is when we were were the leaders, and it's kind of neck and neck with Kentucky. There's a little bit of a debate there, but we grew a lot of hemp. But it started in 1908 was when we first started growing the crop, and it steadily rose until World War II, when there was a big program to encourage farmers to grow more hemp for the war effort, because our fiber supply was cut off during World War II in the Pacific. So we grew a lot, and interestingly, that hemp that you saw is remnant from when Wisconsin was growing a lot. So there was a lot of seed that escaped, and that is commonly referred to as ditch weed throughout the state, which is actually just feral or naturalized hemp from when we were producing so much in the 40s and early 50s.
And I think it was somewhere, wasn't it the 70s? In the 70s, it was kind of hemp growing was illegal in Wisconsin, or made illegal?
Yes. So it was the last hemp crop was planted in the country in 1958 in Wisconsin. It wasn't actually legal until 1970 with the Controlled Substances Act, when it became classified. But it was so heavily taxed, and there was such a taboo against it, that it was not grown since 1958.
Well, what changed to make hemp a crop again?
So, you know, it's always been intertwined with drug-type cannabis or marijuana, and so there was a huge stigma against the plant because it's very difficult to distinguish. They can look very similar. mostly the difference in the field, a lot of the times when you're growing for fiber production or grain, it's the plants are planted more densely, so they look different. But since it was hard to tell the difference when everything became illegal, but other countries have continued to grow hemp. So in Europe, hemp has remained legal, and in Canada, they re-legalized hemp in 1998. And so there's been more and more products that have been developed from hemp that are appealing. It's often said that hemp has a lower input need than a lot of other crops or common crops like corn. You know, a lot of that is speculation, and that's the kind of research we're doing right now. But if it requires less nutrients or less water, also because hemp is new, again, it's not really registered for any synthetic pesticides or herbicides. So it is grown in a mostly organic fashion because you can't really add a lot of these additional inputs at the moment. And then also some of the cannabinoids have been discovered since the 1960s, but with CBD and these other compounds, people are starting to see that there might be benefits, particularly with CBD. It has been found that it is a prevention for some severe seizure disorders, especially in children. So there's medicinal reasons why they're being scientifically proven now, so it's gaining in popularity. And yeah, lots of reasons. I could go on.
Well, I was thinking about the CBD side of it. I know some people who were involved, in that. And there was just a flood of that side of the crop being grown. And I think prices just went in the tank for those growers. But you're looking at a different uses for hemp that make it attractive for Wisconsin, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, so my program and other researchers I'm working with, we're looking at all sides of it. So I've done a couple of years of research on the CBD side, and it's true. A lot of people decided to grow hemp, but initially there was a very high price point for growing and selling hemp, but there is not as much demand, and part of that is because you can't put CBD in a lot of food and beverage products right now. And also, people got very good in the last 3 years at growing it, so the yield and biomass has gone up drastically. But there is the whole untapped market still of growing for grain and growing for fiber, which have many, many uses. So we're researching all three of those areas.
And our climate works pretty well, doesn't it, for this kind of crop?
Yeah, particularly for the fiber. So there's a process when you grow the fiber. After it's done, it's called redding. And that redding process is when you separate the two main components of the fiber, the bast, which is the long outer fiber, and the herd, which is the internal shorter fiber. And this redding process is a slow, controlled rot. And to do that, you can actually lay the plants in the field. And since we have fairly wet falls here, early fall, late summer, you can do that outside here, which is very different than if you're in a more arid environment. So Wisconsin has a great climate for field redding.
Yeah, for sure. Dennis in Two River has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, I think you said some animals are fed some hemp plants. I just wonder, is there any indication of those animals having less inflammation or less pain?
Yeah, so the interesting thing with feeding hemp to animals in the United States is that it is currently illegal. However, it is legal in other countries, and they've certainly been doing it in Europe and other countries for a long time. So there's kind of two different things people are exploring. They're exploring feeding the grain to animals to see if it's just has a good nutritive value for the animals that's equivalent to other animal feeds. And then the flip side of that is kind of the medicinal side, whereas if you were treating animals with CBD products or the same thing that humans are using hemp for, whether it has those kind of anti-inflammation or pain management effects. And there are many people that are looking at that exact same thing right now. So I would say that right now, if you look at the scientific literature, there's starting to be more of a body supporting those claims. But certainly, if you word of mouth talk to people, a lot of people are very happy with giving CBD to their animals and it's seemingly having a positive effect.
Interesting. Thanks, Dennis, for calling. Appreciate it. You could join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. You know, from an environmental point of view, I think hemp is pretty good too. Especially when it comes to carbon dioxide.
Yeah. It's really funny because there's these three different crops that you can grow when you're talking about hemp, and because we're kind of entering this phase now, we're going to try to start growing more for grain and more for fiber. That will be very interesting to see as we have more acreage, if that is true. Certainly, as I mentioned earlier, with the inputs, it seems like the fewer pesticides and herbicides and a lower water requirement and maybe a slightly lower nitrogen requirement. A lot of it also has to do with what leaves the field. So if you're taking the whole plant off the field, or how much of the plant, the leaves are dropping and going back into the ground and that carbon sequestration cycle. But those things I'll say are very interesting and are being studied right now. But I think there's a little bit of data that's lacking before we can confidently say that.
Yeah, I heard it consumed like up to four times as much carbon dioxide as trees do.
Yeah.
Well.
I don't think I'm willing to stand by that quite yet.
Okay, well, we'll leave it at that then. How many farmers grow hemp in this state?
So the first year that you could grow hemp in the state of Wisconsin was 2018, and there were just a few hundred, 200 or so that started in 2018, and then there was a massive increase the last 2 years. So I think about 1,200 licensed growers in both 2019 and 2020. And as you mentioned, there's right now an oversupply of hemp that was grown for CBD. So this year it seems like we're about half that, so a little more like 700-ish. The Department of Ag that releases StatCap, when they release those numbers, it's kind of on a rolling basis. So we don't actually know how many people will be licensed until maybe the end of June. But I imagine it'll be roughly half to two-thirds of what we saw in 2019 and 2020.
Dr. Shelby Ellison, assistant professor in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison, our guest, talking with her about hemp production in Wisconsin. Join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau, our producer today, Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller, and my guest is Dr. Shelby Ellison, an assistant professor in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison, talking about production of hemp in the state. Certainly, if you want to join in, the number is 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Let's take a call. Tom in La Crosse, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, sir. As I understand it, 1 in 2 or 1 in 1.91 seeds is a female plant.
Is that correct?
So, Under natural production, yes, there should be about a 50% distribution of male and female seeds.
Thank you.
Okay, and we are interested, or you are interested in working with the female seeds, or is it the male seeds? I've forgotten already.
So when you're growing for high cannabinoid production, you're typically only growing females. And interestingly, so there, you know, typically you would see half males and half females in a field, but there are ways, through horticultural propagation, you can clonally propagate a female plant by taking cuttings where you would have only females, or you can purchase feminized seeds, which are all females, and that's done through a process where you can actually convince a female plant to make pollen, but that pollen is still female, and then when it pollinates a female plant, all the seeds produced are female. So there are some tricks to produce only female seeds or cuttings.
Interesting. Thanks, Tom. Dylan in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Dylan.
Hey, how's it going? This is Dylan. I'm calling from Tree Huggers Co-op in La Crosse. We're a industrial hemp growing facility. We're just getting our indoor facility up and running, and thought the show was really interesting. We actually had a customer leave and said you guys should tune in and check it out. We've been a lot of your comments about like the CBD industry. Has been interesting. We're seeing like a huge surge in people actually coming in for a lot of our CBD products, and a lot of guys coming in asking for like the smokable hemp flower and asking us, when do we see Wisconsin finally legalizing cannabis, which if we understand the plant, it's all cannabis with different cannabinoids, and really looking at it in that outlook on the plant in general and regulating all the different cannabinoids. We've seen a huge surge with CBN, CBD, CBG, and really what we want is, I mean, people are asking for, you know, low-limit THC and stuff, so we're hoping to see our state finally come to grips with that. But
there we go. Dylan, thank you for calling. Comments, Shelby?
Yeah, I mean, there's not much that I can comment that botanically and the plant that it all will, you know, it's all cannabis sativa to me from my perspective. So it will be interesting to see what the state does. You know, just looking at numbers, it seems like there's a general approval for it in the state. So I'll be curious, and it will certainly impact my research moving forward. It has been challenging just even working in hemp because of the increased regulation. I was in a carrot breeding program for 7 years, and there's a lot more paperwork in hemp, I must say. And yeah, so it'll be interesting, and it will I don't really have much to say that I can offer, but I'll be very curious. It'll impact. Oh, I remember. I was going to say that at the federal level, because it's still federally illegal to do anything with drug type cannabis, funding is a challenge still, because a lot of the funding we get is through the federal government. And so each state kind of has their own programs that they have to apply for funding, because some states have hemp and some states have drug type cannabis. So that will be nice to kind of clarify that landscape in the future of how we'll be receiving funding for hemp research and or drug type cannabis research.
Well, speaking of research, let's talk about your research for a minute before we take any more calls or questions here. And you're working with a sort of a broad range of researchers, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, I mean, with a new crop like this, and you know, normally you're kind of taking over from a predecessor with your program, and you gain all of their years and years of knowledge. And here there wasn't really that, so it's taking a massive team to get all the information we need.
And what are you focusing on?
So there's. Right now, I kind of would break it up maybe into about four parts, and that would be the production. So this is where extension comes in a lot too, which is, how do you grow this in Wisconsin? What is the plant spacing? When do you put it in the field? When do you harvest? What cultivars do well? So just that, you know, how much NPK does it need? Those kind of questions, and that I think people have really hit the ground running, and I've seen some very beautiful hemp crops here, and again, as we transition into the grain and fiber, we need a little bit more information on that side, too, for the state of Wisconsin, especially when it comes to those things like how long do you rut it in a field for it to be processed. So there's the agronomic side. The side that's most near and dear to my heart is kind of the actual genetics and breeding of hemp cultivars. So we need to figure out what the main issues are for growers, what are the biggest pests. There's a couple of boring insects that seem to be very problematic, and then figuring out how to breed resistance for those various pests. Also just traits that are important for, you know, breeding cultivars that have high CBD and low THC, so they're compliant. Or if you're growing a grain crop, making sure the grain doesn't shatter off of the plant. That definitely increases yields. So the breeding. And then there's also the economic side of this, which is huge. As we heard, the prices of CBD have fallen drastically. So figuring out what's the most, you know, understanding where all the costs are in growing and processing, and how we can better manage those costs so people have more insight into what their production costs are going to be and how they can be profitable, and maybe what some potential insurance options are. And then, you know, the consumer demand side of all of that, and where people should be targeting, as that caller mentioned, just what products seem to be selling and where they should be moving towards. And then finally, the bigger scheme of that, the product development. So I'm way on the up, you know, on the high end of the seeds and making good seeds that make good plants. Well, then what are we doing with this hemp, especially for fiber? How do you make better, biocomposite or textiles or fiber board? So getting some research on kind of the actual production of the products and how they can be competitive against existing products or more potentially sustainable or environmentally friendly.
Jeff in Augusta online, I think, has something that relates to what you just said. Jeff, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I would like to kind of touch on the topic of the market and the fluctuations in the growers. I'm wondering if there's any focus being directed towards the other industrial applications besides the three that you mentioned, being biofuels, biodegradable plastics, candle wax, et cetera. And if that has anything to do with breeding, if specific breeding techniques can make plants that are, you know, higher in a biofuel content.
Yeah, definitely. I think those things are all very much emerging areas of research. One of the questions that I have on the breeding and genetic side is, you know, okay, what are we going to use this hemp for whatever part it is, to be able to have better breeding targets. It's an interesting question right now, because there's lots of things that hemp can be used for, but it'll be good to have more insight into, okay, how much of hemp is going to be converted for biofuel production, or how much is going to be used for biodegradable plastic production. So there are definitely traits that you can then breed specifically for those uses. There's lots of research, but I think the big thing right now, and I'm hoping why maybe hemp is having this moment, is figuring out if it can compete against other products. Like a lot of these things you can also make out of corn, but the idea is, how can we diversify our agriculture so we can have multiple plants that can help solve our problems, and then maybe some of those plants are better for different parts of the country, or maybe take lower input because they do a better job for some reason. So the short answer is yes, but it's going to be really interesting to see both at the national level, what hemp is used for, and also kind of at the more regional or state level, what we end up growing hemp for, to breed those better cultivars for those uses.
And those, it's got to be kind of tricky, because you need to have what's the 0.3, whatever the level is.
Right. Mm-hmm. 0.3 THC.
Yeah. 0.3 THC to get plants that aren't going to sneak up into 0.35 or something.
Mm-hmm.
Every time, I would think that's got to be a big challenge.
Yeah, it absolutely is for the high cannabinoid hemp production. If you're growing for CBD, it's problematic. It's a little bit less so with some of the grain and fiber cultivars because those were originally bred for those for grain or for fiber, so they don't have high THC. However, what happens then when you have some variety that has great disease resistance and you want to cross with it, then you have to do all of that over again. So it certainly keeps creeping in, and you know, there's either the genetics way of addressing it by breeding cultivars that are less than that 0.3% THC, or the regulatory effort, which would be to increase that to a level that would be easier for farmers and breeders to work with.
Okay. Jerry, the mailman in Linden, emailed. He's an avid bow hunter, and from what he was told, some of the bow strings are made from hemp. He found it interesting. They must be very strong. Those fibers are strong.
That is very interesting. I actually haven't, I'm writing that down because I come from a family of hunters, and I'll look into that. But the fibers are incredibly strong. That I think they are one of the strongest natural fibers in the plant world. I think they're also rivaled by silkworms in the natural world. But I'll look into that and see if I can find any bow fiber products.
Cool. Okay. Joe in Lake Geneva. Hi. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for taking my call. Great discussion. And I'm curious to learn more about home growing. Most of the conversation has revolved around industrial growing. I'm curious if you can grow at home. And if so, you know, where are the best places to find feminized seeds, you know, below the 0.3% THC level? And I imagine this might, you know, cause difficulties with law enforcement because a cannabis plant looks like a high THC cannabis plant. So if you could speak to that a little bit, that'd be great. Thank you.
Sure. Yeah, so you can grow on your home property, even if you're, so I'm in downtown Madison, you can grow, but there's a minimum plant requirement. So no matter where you're growing, you still have to get a license through DACAP to grow hemp, and you also have to have your hemp sampled at the end of the season to make sure that it's compliant. And that minimum plant sampling number is 10 female plants this year. I believe it used to be 15, so it's dropped to 10 female plants. But it's kind of sad because when you sample, you have to take 5 inches of each of those plants. So you feel maybe like they just took half of your yield when that comes through, but it is what has to happen. And so then, yes, if those pass and they're less than 0.3%, you get a fit for commerce, and your fit for commerce is that you are allowed to use those plants as you see fit, or sell them if you want to. And what else? As far as feminized seeds, so DACAP has a variety approval process where you have to say what variety you're growing and they'll approve it. And that's pretty much them looking to make sure that seed has been grown before and has been compliant. So there's a list of compliant seed sources on the DACAP hemp website that you can find, you know, what seed you can buy. And then you really, it's just narrowing that down, calling the companies. Last year, we did a hemp cultivar trial, and so we have results kind of on cannabinoid content and total plant biomass yield and flowering time, those types of metrics in an extension fact sheet that can be found on the UW hemp extension website if you're just interested in seeing how, I think we looked at 30-some cultivars last year, how they performed in the state.
Yeah, there we go. You mentioned DACAP, and Christopher in Madison emailed in his job search. He noted that DACAP has 4 positions open for hemp chemists. Any insights on where DACAP is headed on this topic?
So the whole hemp legalization in the country and in the state has just been a moving target since it's been legalized, first with different rules under the 2014 Farm Bill, and then now we're kind of just starting to interact the final rule from the 2018 Farm Bill, despite it being 2021. So DAGCAP, every year there's kind of like the rules and procedures that are pertinent to this growing season, and this is the last year that we are kind of technically in the 2014 rules. And all this is to say that DAGCAP, when they get kind of guidance from the federal level of what's happening at the federal 2018 Farm Bill level, they have to figure out how to sample hemp in accordance with those procedures. And also DAGCAP has to have their labs now DEA certified, because that's what was written into the newest hemp rule. So they're constantly, their chemists not only are testing at the state level to make sure independent growers or farmers are compliant, but they're also developing new protocols that have to be in compliance with the federal program.
Oh, man. Quite the process.
Yeah,
indeed.
It's not like carrots, I'm telling you.
Oh, boy. Steve in Comstock. Hi.
Hi. I have an anecdote and a question. I'll go with the anecdote first. Many years ago, back in the 70s, there was an old defunct hemp farm from the war over by Turtle Lake. And my high school math teacher, Jim Chechuar, used to tell a story about in the fall, people would always go up there. He figured it was college kids and raid it, figuring they were, you know, and he said, and you could all see them because they lived on the lake. He'd be up there with their lights. And I was just like to picture those kids back in the 70s furiously shoveling that into their VW van, driving off, going, oh, boy, oh, boy. But my question was, many years ago, I used some hemp paper for taking notes, and every once in a while I have to refer to them, and I've noticed that hemp paper just does not seem to age. So is hemp better for certain things like that, like textiles, paper? Is it more durable, that kind of thing?
Yeah, the thing with the paper, I think, is quite true from what I've read and kind of have noted also firsthand, that a lot of the times, things that were supposed to have a very long life cycle on paper they would use hemp paper or hemp parchment. So I think it is because it's a stronger fiber and because of just other components of the hemp, that it is a longer lasting paper. So that seems true. And it also speaks to why you might not want it for other purposes, like for general writing paper. I think also it is harder to bleach or like make the true white color with it. So I think it is a longer lasting paper when used as paper. And then to the textile part of your question, you know, because of those fibers, again, it makes for a very durable cloth. And actually canvas, the material canvas, got its name from cannabis, and specifically that it was this very, very tough material. And that's a lot of the clothing that I've purchased so far that has been made from hemp has been kind of like workwear or things that will have, you know, will have to stand up to some wear and will have more longevity.
Very interesting. Steve, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Roger in Park Falls, your turn. Hi, Roger.
Hi. Hey, I was wondering what kind of equipment it's going to take to do this. Is the conventional hand equipment like a New Holland round baler and a disc bind, would that cut the mustard with this hemp? And what kind of seeder do you use? Do you just use a grain drill, or do you use a corn planter, or what, you know, the investment would be?
Yes. So if you're growing for fiber or grain, yes, you've kind of answered those questions. So I think a grain drill is typically how things are planted. If you're growing for seed or for grain production, I think that's a little bit maybe like closer to 35, 40 pounds an acre, and fiber production is just a higher rate of maybe 70 pounds per acre for seeding. And then for harvest, so if you're harvesting it for fiber, then it's going to be, are you talking about fiber or talking about grain or CBD?
I I'm talking about, you know, I guess the fiber would be where you probably have to get it so it's mature and then late.
Yeah. Well, I can answer one thing that's interesting is that there are dual purpose crops where you could come through with like a combine that you take off the grain from the top of the plant and then later go through for the fiber harvest, and you might use something like a disc mower or a sickle bar, and then that would just sit down on the field until later after the rutting process you would come through and bale it. So it's obviously there's a lot of equipment to do that up front. So I've talked to people about this that are doing it for the first time, and it's not necessarily any equipment that might be novel or something like specific for hemp, but just that you might want to talk to some of your neighbors and everybody maybe help share some equipment the first few times around before everybody individually invests in all of these new pieces of equipment. And for growing for the CBD, you know, if you're growing an acre or two, it's pretty much a by hand process. Maybe you might have a plastic layer, you might have a transplanter that could be anything, a tobacco or veggie transplanter. But harvest is, yeah, pretty much you're going to be doing that by hand for the most part.
There you go, Roger. Thank you. And Tim in Pembine, your turn. Hi, Tim.
Hi, guys. Yeah, I understand that hemp is antifungal. So if you're getting this longevity out of it, like I heard, hempcrete takes like 100 years to cure. So the reason it lasts so long is fungus can't eat it up.
Mm-hmm.
So my idea for a show is take and chop up some of that into whatever powder. You do your interior walls, your stud walls, inside panels. Use, I don't know, some kind of glue adhesive.
Mm-hmm.
Right on there, and you should never have black mold inside your walls.
Oh, hemp resistant to mold. What about that, Shelby?
Yeah, that's definitely there's been some initial studies that have shown that it is very antimicrobial, antifungal, and a product similar to what they were talking about that's getting more traction right now is hempcrete, which is where you would take kind of the internal, the herd fiber, which is the shorter fiber, and chop that up. And normally it's mixed with water and lime as the binding substance. And then you kind of have that. And it's not, again, it's not structurally sound, but it's more of an insulative or internal framework for construction. And yeah, it has these very potentially great benefits of being antifungal and fire retardant and things that sound good in buildings. So
yeah.
I think that's a really interesting area too, because the hemp doesn't necessarily have to be processed as much as some of the other things. Like with textiles, there's a lot of additional downstream processing that needs to happen. But some of these things that, you know, only take one more or two more steps out of the field, I think are very promising.
Well, Shelby, this has been fascinating. I've learned a lot. I bet our listeners did as well. I hope you'll come back and be with us again.
Yeah, certainly.
It would be a lot of fun to have you back. Shelby Ellison, assistant professor in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison. Great to have her with us, and we'll get her back. And as time goes on, and see what's going on with their research and what's going on with hemp in Wisconsin. Speaking of Wisconsin, it's hard to separate Wisconsin from the dairy industry, and we're going to be talking about what the dairy industry is doing to help students learn more about it. That next. I'm Larry Mehler. You're listening to the Ideas Network.